Hello and welcome to Mental Awakening, the podcast that explores all topics related to trauma recovery, mental health, chronic pain, and healing. I'm your host, Sarah DeKeely, psychotherapist and mental health social worker. And in this episode, I will speak about reoccurring pain, how pain becomes chronic, why it returns, and what to do about it. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of this podcast with me. So today I thought I would talk about reoccurring pain. It's something that I often speak about with my clients because I work with people with chronic pain related issues and symptoms. And I've certainly gone through it myself. A lot of times when we're thinking of chronic pain, we think of it as something that just lasts forever and that it's just going to constantly happen. It's never going to go away. And that's actually not true. So we're going to talk a bit about, you know, the science behind chronic pain, as well as the energetic reasons as to why pain becomes reoccurrent. Most of us, I hope by now, know that the brain and the nervous system create the pain, right? It's really important to begin by understanding that the brain and the nervous system create the majority of the pain that we experience in our bodies. So the majority of the symptoms that we have. So the brain sends messages to the body and the body sends messages to the brain. There's like this constant communication between the body and the brain. And if you've been in chronic stress, which most people usually are, especially when there's a history of trauma, there's a conditioning in place in terms of how you go about life, how you think about life, how you manage stress, what's happened to you, your environment, and so on, then the majority of these messages that are being communicated between the body and the brain are danger messages, right? So the brain interprets these danger messages and then decides whether or not to create pain in response to keep us safe. It's just a very simple explanation. There's obviously a lot more to it, but let's just go with that for now. So the brain takes hundreds of factors into account when creating pain in fractions of a second, like in nanoseconds, right? And it's quite a fascinating process and something that we now know we actually have influence over. So we know that through neuroplasticity, we can actually change and adapt our brain to reorganize and to grow neural networks. So this can involve functional changes to our brain damage or structural changes due to learning. This is exciting because it means that once you learn how your body, how your system operates, then you can work with that system without necessarily fearing what that system actually does. You can work with it and you can little by little change it. So let's talk a bit about acute pain versus chronic pain, reoccurring pain, right? So when there is an outside threat, let's say if you touch a hot plate or a hot stove or something, we obviously end up injuring ourselves, burning ourselves. So our brain sends out pain messages to let us know that there's something wrong. And this allows us to act and try and avoid and repair any damage as quickly as possible. So we pull our hand away from something hot to prevent ourselves from, you know, getting burned or seeking medical help for an injury, right? So acute pain is useful. Whereas in chronic pain, this protective behavior loses its protective benefits. So I always talk about how chronic pain, reoccurring pain, is like a faulty alarm system, right? So the brain is sending out pain messages when there's actually no threat. There's a perceived threat. So our nervous system has become overactive. We tend to become more and more sensitive to stresses to the point where you have a thought and you're experiencing pain physically, right? So why is the brain sending out pain messages when there's no threat? And again, I want to go back to neuroplasticity because our brain is neuroplastic, which means that it learns and physically adapts from what happens as we go through our lives. And as it adapts, those neural pathways within our brain change accordingly. So the more you repeat an experience, the stronger those neural pathways get. Okay? The more you think of something, the bigger it gets. The more you do something, the better and more automatic that becomes for you in your brain, right? So chronic pain changes our brain and nervous system over time. It learns to continue producing pain messages and changes its neural pathways to do so, even when these pain messages are not really serving a purpose and they're not accurate. It's still doing that. So essentially, the brain becomes more skilled at producing the pain that you're feeling, and that's what we call maladaptive neuroplasticity. So the good news here is that just as our brain has learned to produce these pain messages, it can also stop producing them. And this is something that is very much the case. I know I've certainly gone through that. I've experienced that, and I've also supported other people in doing that. So when you live with reoccurring pain and chronic pain, there are some behaviors which, you know, as much as they can be really understandable because we're just doing these things automatically because our nervous system is essentially what drives us, they end up contributing to the cycle of chronic pain. So changing these behaviors can play a significant part in retraining the brain and overcoming the symptoms that we're experiencing. And so some of these things are hypervigilance, when we become really focused on the pain and are constantly aware of it. When we start thinking about it in regards to every action throughout the day, looking for potential threats, you know, that hypervigilance and constantly in the state of high alert, where you're actually feeding back to your brain that there is danger, and which makes you feel the pain even more, which makes you more symptomatic. And it doesn't always have to be pain as such. It can be discomfort, it can be tension, it can be tingling, it can be dizziness, it can be anxiety. There are so many other symptoms that fall under this umbrella of mind-body conditions, right? It's not just reoccurring pain. So hypervigilance is one of these behaviors. And I also want to acknowledge that when you've been through trauma, so that's where, you know, either physical trauma or emotional trauma, there's usually a history, or perhaps even for some people, there's PTSD, right? There's post-traumatic stress disorder. And those things are also quite relevant to be mindful of, because that contributes to that hypervigilance. Then you have catastrophizing of the pain. So worrying about your pain constantly and thinking about the worst case scenario. That's something that obviously strengthens your neural pathways and contributes to reoccurring pain. So just like hypervigilance, when we're catastrophizing our symptoms, it feeds back to our brain that there is danger and the pain is, the necessary protective response. The other thing that we tend to do is avoidance behavior, so fear avoidance. Hypervigilance and catastrophizing can lead to fear avoidance, which means that you become really fearful of your symptoms, of your discomfort, of your pain, and then you start avoiding things, which actually worsens the entire thing, right? It can make it more recurrent, it can heighten it by feeding into the stress and the pain cycle. Some other things that tend to contribute to reoccurring pain are fear of failure, rejection, fear of not belonging, fear of saying no or perhaps being disliked, fear of what other people think, fear of your own power, which means that there is an attachment to actually not being well. Because if I'm not well, I always have a reason to say no, I always have a reason to bail out, I always have a reason to just kind of get help, get support. And being strong can sometimes feel almost like a threat because we've always feel like we've had to be strong. So we can fear our own power. And being in that state of what we call victim consciousness can also serve us. And this is something that not everyone feels comfortable perhaps hearing, but it's a very liberating thing if you can actually embrace it. Because if you own it, right, if you just go, yep, I do that, then you can also undo it. You can also take your power back. So often when we're dealing with victim consciousness, we have this deep-seated yearning for nurture, which is so human, right? It's so human. But it's something we have become accustomed to seeking from others. And although that is an absolute necessity to meet our human needs, we never learned how to actually meet that need for ourselves. We never learned how to nurture ourselves, how to soothe ourselves when there is discomfort. And so lack of, I guess, practice in that contributes to reoccurring pain. And it just comes down to returning back to love, this practice of self-compassion, which Eastern philosophers and Buddhist monks and mindfulness teachers have been speaking about for decades, if not centuries. I also think it's important to acknowledge here that self-soothing and returning back to love does not mean that we spiritually bypass ourselves and our feelings, nor does it mean that we gaslight ourselves or allow others to gaslight us. So when there is a violation that you are experiencing internally, that's valid for you. And this is where it's really important to work with your nervous system, to understand your nervous system. Because if you're feeling violated in a moment or in an instant or whatever, in an experience, that needs acknowledgement. And first and foremost, it needs acknowledgement from you. So that means that you need to go, all right, I feel this. What do I need to do for me right now in this moment to help myself feel that validation, that acknowledgement of what I'm feeling, and to also get myself to a place of feeling more comfortable, feeling safer, feeling more soothed. So this could be, for example, that boundaries being crossed for you, and that's something that you're realizing that, oh, I feel violated. So that means that I've agreed to something that I'm not actually comfortable with. And so this is where it's important not to blame other people or try to control other people to think and behave in the way that we want them to behave so we feel safe, but rather to take responsibility for the fact that if I'm feeling violated, that's information coming from my body for me to act on, right? So I need to express something here. I need to express my truth, or I need to take responsibility for what I need in this situation for myself. You know, our culture is just so messed up in the sense that we don't acknowledge sensitive people. We don't acknowledge the importance of connecting with our bodies, you know, tuning inwards. We don't have these practices in place. We don't learn these things naturally. And we're often told that there's something wrong with us because we're highly sensitive or because we're potentially neurodivergent. But actually, that's a sign of intelligence, because this means that you are a lot more connected and in tune with yourself than perhaps somebody else or the majority of people. Fear of the future, fear of pain always being a constant thing, especially when you've been living with it for many, many years and you kind of expect it to continue to be the same way and to be there forever and ever, is a challenging one. Because we end up feeding this anxious mind and continuously living life from a place of past or future, not at all fully present, which heightens symptoms or worsens symptoms and continues to bring them on. So in many ways, you could say that we have to build a relationship with the present moment. And for most of us, the present moment has been, you know, perceived as a threat. It wasn't something that was safe. Especially growing up, we had to be quite vigilant to our parents' needs and, you know, what was expected of us, what other people needed from us in order to have our emotional needs met. So the present moment is something that the majority of people have a difficult relationship with. So we need presence, a practice in presence, which is very difficult because we have a human mind and it can be very busy in there. And so I try my best to support my clients in getting a taste for what it's like to just be present with what's showing up. And so little by little, as we stay consistent in these practices, the present moment becomes safer. It feels safer. It's no longer perceived as a threat. And that's when the mind and the body can relax, because there is a container for everything that's here. There's permission for everything to be here. And I know for myself, this practice with presence is a journey. It's a lifelong journey. It's a continuous practice. It really is a way of life and not something that we can necessarily just tick off and do for a couple of weeks, a couple of months. It really needs to be an ongoing thing. One big trigger in my life has been dealing with family members and certain members of the family that just bring up all kinds of wounds and all kinds of emotions and all kinds of, you know, big feelings. So I've had to really work on this, and it's something I'm still working on, to not take those things personally and to also forgive as well as understand that not everybody has the same level of consciousness and the same level of awareness, and that if they're still in my life, I can use that as an opportunity for practice. They can act as a teacher for me in many ways to continue to bring presence to what's being triggered within me. Because at the end of the day, even though boundaries are important, of course, it goes without say, and it's important that we communicate, we also need to take responsibility for what's being triggered within us. We can't control other people, how they behave and how they choose to live their lives and the choices that they make, because that's where we lose our power. All of your power is always within you and in the now. And this is something I try to remind myself of regularly. Other things that come to mind that contribute to recurring pain is anger. So anger around vulnerability, not wanting to feel weak or feeling angry that there is this, I guess, this reality, right? This reality that we are vulnerable human beings and life can throw things at us at any given moment and things will happen when we least expect it. That can provoke chronic pain or reoccurring pain. I know for me, just last week, I had an accident and I came out of nowhere. I went into a state of shock, experienced whiplash, and my body went into, you know, just this rush of cortisol. I could really feel it. I could see myself go through, you know, I was very aware of what was happening to me because of, I guess, the knowledge that I have about the body and the nervous system and the brain. I was really observing myself completely in this experience of being flooded with cortisol and being in the fight and flight and so on. And that brought on some symptoms for me. Thankfully, nothing is ever chronic for me anymore, because I know how to work with my brain and with my nervous system. And it also helped me to recover much quicker. Other things such as grief and not feeling a sense of belonging. I find that grief is a big one. I've certainly always grieved something in my life, and I see that also in the lives of people that I work with, that we're always grieving something and we need to build a healthier relationship with our grief and with the parts of ourselves that are grieving things. Another really big one is disappointment. Disappointment triggers reoccurring pain. when we have expectations, and often there are expectations that perhaps aren't realistic, or they're conditional, or they're based on some story, some narrative, something that we have in our mind, and things don't happen that way, it tends to trigger us. So how do we heal chronic pain? How do we deal with reoccurring pain? First, I want to mention that everyone is different. So it could be that if you're too passive, you need to be a bit more engaged with life, with everything that's happening around you. You need to have some boundaries in place. Or if you're too aggressive, then you need to kind of pull back and perhaps engage some of your softer side, some, you know, dropping to your heart. And there's obviously a lot of things to be said about that as well. But I also want to talk about how we can teach our brain to stop producing pain messages and break that pain cycle. So we do need support. Everyone needs support, help, guidance on their recovery journey. It's hard to do this work alone. So if you don't already have a therapist to work with, it's important that you do, and that you actually stay patient, because, you know, it's not something that you can just get to the bottom of after a few sessions. Even if we improve, things can still come up again and again and again. And it's always good to have that one person there, or perhaps someone that has some understanding and training in this area that you can just go back to process what's coming up for you. So the steps to take to retrain the brain will really vary depending on the therapy that you receive and the method that's used. But fundamentally, you have to first learn about pain neuroscience. And that's why with pretty much everyone who starts to work with me, I always, you know, give them some resources and things that they can educate themselves on, because that basis of education to work from is really important. And that's how you can be guided through tackling negative pain perceptions and pain creating behaviors and replacing them with positive coping strategies. And also gradually teaching your brain that specific movements and activities or feelings in particular, because I know for a lot of the people I work with, it's the feelings, it's the emotions that actually trigger the symptoms or the pain more than what they do physically. Even though physically getting more active or doing something with your body can sometimes bring on pain, it's the emotion, it's usually the fear underneath that of what could go wrong or what could worsen that actually makes things worse. So teaching the brain that these things are not dangerous, that there's no threat present, is really the key here. And as your brain learns that, it will rewire itself so you can start feeling relief from your symptoms. What's really tricky about this is that the majority of people tend to give up very quickly. They don't stay patient with this process because their focus is mainly on trying to get rid of something. You know, it's like, I don't want this. I want to get rid of this. How can I get rid of this? It's coming up again. I don't want this. So that resistance obviously feeds the pain. And that's why I think it's important to work with a therapist, because you have a space where you can go and, or you have someone who can hold space for you, where you can just literally let it all out and you can process the disappointment, the grief, the sadness you feel about what's happening with your body again and again. But you still get back on that horse and you still get back onto doing your exercises and you still get back to focusing on living your life. So graded exposure therapy to tackle this fear avoidance by gently, you know, getting into the situations that you might be fearing and starting to feel certain emotions that perhaps you might be fearing. And again, these are things that are so much easier done when you have a trained professional to work with than when you're doing it on your own. So as you start to feel those yucky, uncomfortable feelings that have been perceived as threat by your mind, as you start to understand your subconscious more through therapy and perspective, as you become, you know, consistent with your practices, as you expose yourself to the things that actually have been quite fearful and scary, then your brain starts to retrain, right? So it's being retrained away from pain as it learns that this situation, this emotion, this feeling, this thought is nothing to, you know, send pain messages or create pain messages around. And there's been numerous, you know, studies now showing that, you know, graded exposure therapy is incredible. It's really good for us. Another thing is graded motor imagery. So that's GMI, which uses the brain's neuroplasticity along with mirror neurons to retrain the brain. So what that means is that when we're watching other people do an activity or imagining doing that activity ourselves, we actually are supporting our brain. We're utilizing mirror neurons to teach the brain that these things are not painful, they're not dangerous. That's why visualization is actually a very powerful tool. And I use it in a very gentle way in my sessions with clients where I get them to connect with their body through going inwards, through really being with the sensations that they're experiencing or that are present, that are there, and little by little training themselves to relax into that, and even just repeating in their mind that it's safe to be with that, and eventually imagining themselves doing the things that perhaps they're very afraid or fearful of doing. It's just really about becoming present to this moment and holding space for what's showing up. And so through regular mindfulness practices, you can learn to reduce the stress cycle. You know, you can increase emotional control, you can relieve chronic pain symptoms. And it's just, there's so many wonderful benefits to this practice of bringing presence to what's happening. So instead of trying to run away from the fear, from the, you know, disappointment of the pain coming up again, from, you know, the sadness of being with symptoms, move towards it. That's what I always tell my clients. You want to become present. You want to be a space holder for what's showing up for you, for what's present for you. And that's what was lacking for us growing up. Pretty much all of us as children, we didn't have that emotional presence in the way that perhaps we needed it. And of course, parents always do their best, almost always do their best. So it's not at all because the parenting perhaps wasn't the best. It's just that it's really a hard skill for a lot of people to master. It's a hard skill for human beings to master in general. Just the ability to be present, to be a container for someone else's pain, for someone else's emotions, to be able to show that kind of empathy and compassion without necessarily trying to fix or get rid of something. So when you don't have that modeled to you growing up, it's natural that you don't know how to do that for yourself. And yet it's such a powerful practice. But of course, our brain isn't necessarily going to want to do that. It takes practice and practice and practice, because initially it can be perceived as boring, or, you know, that there's all these signals going off in our body because we're in our fight and flight and we just want to get out of it. We just don't want to do it. It's, you know, it's just not engaging enough. So to sit with some of that discomfort is really important, because how else are you going to rewire your brain? If you keep running away from what's uncomfortable, you can't rewire your brain. So even, again, with clients, I try to take them through certain exercises where they can just be in certain positions and not get out of it, to stay with whatever's showing up, especially the resistance. Another thing that's been really helpful for me is having a sense of purpose, having a sense of meaning, and it's a big part of my self-care. And so creativity really helps me to do that. I write, I paint, I connect with my body, I dance. These are ways that I feel a lot more connected to myself and the world around me. And life is not just all about trying to fix something or trying to get somewhere, but rather it becomes a bit more about enjoyment and play and connectivity with myself, with my body, as well as with other people. So we have to not make, you know, the pain, the symptoms, the center of our life. So you don't want to dismiss the emotion that's coming up as symptoms heighten, or the emotion that has been there prior to symptoms heightening. But you also don't want to make the symptoms the center of your life. It really is about finding a healthy balance. You have to actually have some boundaries with these parts of yourself. And sometimes just go, no, I deserve joy. I deserve play. I deserve to go out. I deserve to do fun things. Even if it's not necessarily comfortable, it's healthy for us to be uncomfortable. I don't know what it is about our culture where we've come to somehow learn or think that we need to always be comfortable, that we need to always, you know, live in our comfortable little bubble, which is so unhealthy. If you look at the most resilient cultures, they're the cultures who've had to be in the most horrific conditions. And I think in the West, we tend to see success as living a really comfortable life, not fully taking into account that it's all about balance. We need comfort, and we also need not to always be in that comfort. We need to get out of our comfort zone. That's very important and necessary for our growth, for our nervous system, to build resilience, and so on. So I just want to say a few more things before I wrap up, and that is that when it comes to recurring pain, it's hard, it's not easy, I fully acknowledge that. It's scary and it can feel like it's never going to go away, but it does and it will. It just requires patience and consistency to keep up with your, you know, practices, to attend your appointments, to do your homework, to continue to practice what you learn in your own time, to retrain your brain, because it's not easy to retrain the brain. It requires dedicated hard work and persistence. And patience is also key, because you're not going to see results straight away. And this is a long-term process. And I like to look at it as a lifestyle change, really, because it's a journey and it can take time to start seeing the benefits of what you're putting in. What's also important is that, you know, there's a recognition that you can't trick your brain. You can't just say, oh yeah, no, I'm not afraid of the pain, it's all good, even though you actually feel a lot of fear around the pain. So it's almost better if you journal about what you're feeling, journal about your emotions, and talk about it with a professional or with someone who's a safe person, instead of just denying, dismissing, suppressing, because you can't trick those parts of your brain. You know, you can't just pretend that you don't feel what you feel, because you do. So processing is always a lot more helpful than suppressing, and also obviously a lot more helpful than projecting. Lastly, I want to say that recovery means different things for everyone. It's important to remember that it's a very personal, individual process. For me, it became a spiritual process. It became a spiritual journey because my connection with myself completely changed, and the way I look at symptoms is completely different. So I no longer fear what's happening in my body, even though the fear comes. I can soothe myself and my body back to a place of safety. And I also feel the sadness around the vulnerability that comes up. I mean, just when I, you know, injured myself a few days ago, that vulnerability brought on a lot of feelings, and I cried and cried, and I was journaling, and I was feeling angry, and I was feeling a bit unsure of myself and my body for a couple of days. I still ended up recovering fairly quickly than I would have perhaps some years ago. But it doesn't mean that I no longer feel things, right? You still have to feel your feelings. You have to, again, become a container for them. For some people, recovery from recurring pain and chronic pain may mean a reduction in symptoms and an improvement in the quality of life. And for others, it means that they are pain-free. So you can't really compare yourself to somebody else. Obviously, the goal is to be pain-free, but we can't promise that, right? Life is always going to happen. Things are going to come up, and everyone's journey is different. What's important is to celebrate every success on your journey and also to be open to what you're learning, you know, because every single thing is a learning opportunity, and that's how you can take your power back. So setbacks don't equal failures. You know, very few people's journey starts from one point and then continues to progress in a positive direction until, you know, you reach your goal. That's not at all how recovery works. It's constantly about learning and growing, and, you know, taking one step forward, two steps back, two steps forward, one step back. Like, it's not a linear thing, and it doesn't mean that you can't achieve, you know, your goals. Progress takes time, like I said. It's, you know, patience is really important. In IFS therapy, we talk about the 5 P's, and that's how I've come to live my life, you know, very much based on these 5 P's, which is patience, persistence, presence, playfulness, and perspective. These 5 P's have really helped me to just have that, or return back to that feeling of compassion for myself. There has to be a belief, you know, in yourself. You have to believe in yourself. You have to, even if you don't believe in life or higher power, in love, energy, universe, whatever, at least you need to believe in yourself. You know, build yourself up, encourage yourself, believe that you're capable, and that everything that you're doing is something, you know, and that's a good thing, that you're supporting yourself, that you're grateful for everything that, you know, you're experiencing in your body, because it makes you feel alive, even though it's not the way that you want to experience it. Have faith that it's something that can change, and that you really have control over that, because there is a lot of hope. I wouldn't be saying this if it wasn't true. Retraining your brain is possible. It is something that we now fully can scientifically prove. And it's something that we have been told for thousands of years, you know, and Eastern philosophers and ancient times, they've always talked about it. So there's definitely hope. And I think, if anything, we should never lose hope. All right, everybody, that's it for today. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you're interested in working with me, please visit mentalawakening.com.au. If you loved this episode and found it helpful, please subscribe and leave a review, as it will help more people to access the information shared here. I will be back with another episode very soon. Until then, take care, everybody. Bye for now.